of the Living Geek.
All right, hello everyone, and welcome to another episode of Podcastica, a wibbly wobbly timey wimey podcast of epic proportions here on the Night of the Living Geeks Network. My name is John, and joining me this week are two of the ladies from Girls Interrupting.
Hello.
We have Monica.
Hi, everybody.
And Jackie.
Hi, hi, hi.
How are you guys doing?
Well, it's weird recording with a boy.
I feel very bizarre with you having a microphone.
And talking.
Like, it's a little bit uncomfortable because he's actually making... Like, they can pick it up, you know?
It's not just him muttering in the background.
Exactly. Or, like, looking super disapproving when I don't know who the Green Lantern was from...
Look, there are so many colors.
Yeah, there's just a bunch of colors.
Purple Lantern.
There's, like, a pink one.
So...
There's that face.
The face.
So, of judgment.
I'm reeling you back in.
We found it. We're talking about Doctor Who.
We're talking about Doctor Who, and we collectively watched The Silence in the Library and Forest of the Dead, which are the 8th and 9th episode from season 4, and they were, oddly enough, written by Stephen Moffat.
Dude, no joke, that guy can do episodes.
And they
that's
were
directed
by, I believe it's Euros Lyn. We'll just say that's the
that's how you pronounce that.
Sounds
right.
Starring David Tennant as the Doctor and Catherine Tate as Donna Noble. Also, this is our introduction to Alex Kingston as Professor Riversong. So we have established
Moffat got his dirty paws on.
Well, we have established that these two episodes were written by Stephen Moffat, who is the showrunner now. So, what we do on here is I ask questions, thought-provoking questions.
Ooh,
it's so exciting!
I'm
so
nervous.
Right off
what
the
if
bat,
I know what to say?
Right off the bat, Stephen Moffat. What happened?
He can't do long arcs. He's great at episodes. He also wrote The Doctor's Wife, which is one of my...
No, that was Neil Gaiman.
I apologize.
But he wrote...
Blink.
And he wrote Girl in the Fireplace.
All great.
Amazing.
The one episodes when someone else is a showrunner and he writes it, his episodes are great. They're interesting and different. And, you know, the writing is awesome. But the second you give him an entire show to be, like, in charge of... It's like he loses focus and he doesn't know how to do it.
Well, it's just so bizarre because I've never... Like, his seasons have the biggest fucking plot holes.
Yeah, they don't even make any goddamn sense.
Yeah, exactly.
But his tight episodes are just really well done.
Well, it's just like he ruined the Angels. I mean, let's talk about that. The Blink episode is amazing.
Yes.
I almost would also give him the Crash episode because that brings... I noticed in Silence of the Library, River mentioned it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that brings it back around to their bumping timeline. But the third Angels episode.
He just can't.
It's terrible.
And the things that he did, it's like he can't even keep his characters consistent, which is a problem too. And it's not even about growth, because obviously I want my characters to grow and to learn and all those things. But he actually changes their personality.
Oh, yeah. Like, Based on what he needs from them in that episode. That's not good.
No. And it's like Amy, you know, started out as this awesome girl who waited. And then all of a sudden... what's the episode where she gives up on him 33 years into whatever?
I don't even remember.
That probably is called The Girl Who Waited.
Yeah, The Girl Who Waited. But
who didn't really wait.
Who didn't really wait?
Yeah. No, that was...
freaking quitter. And that was just for that episode. It was so that he could have that conversation or whatever.
Yeah, where she's just like this asshole who gives up on the people that care about her most.
Well, and like River Song is a perfect example. He created River Song, and when he invented her, she was fucking awesome. She's this badass team leader. She's an archaeologist. She doesn't take shit from anyone. Literally, even her paid employer, she's like, I didn't sign that thing. Are you insane?
Well, and she's also... feels comfortable in her relationship with him.
Yeah.
So they have this diary where they're kind of working through their stuff, and, you know, she can see what timeline she's in.
Yeah.
Keep track. But she's secure enough that she doesn't have to follow him around the universe.
Yeah.
You know?
That she's got her adventures and he's got his, and periodically they get to share them.
Exactly.
And that's enough for her because that's what their relationship is based on.
To this woman, and I've never been so angry at a TV show probably in my entire life.
Whoa.
When she actually chooses him over the
universe.
I literally lost my mind. I could not handle it at all.
And the worst part is we'd been looking forward to their like marriage, wedding, whatever since Silence in the Library. Yeah. Since this set of episodes where we find out the only way he learned to trust her is because she knew his name because they got married. And then we're like, oh, my God, that wedding was a fucking travesty.
It was the worst thing. I mean, there is no A, the doctor wouldn't have wanted
never.
That.
Never. He would never, ever.
And there's
ever.
No person, okay, educated person who would ever choose one person over the entirety of time and space. That is unbelievably ridiculous.
Also, I'm sorry, but based on what he's done in the past, there's no fucking way he's dying. Like, let's be real. Just not even, like, take it outside of the show, right? Right. And let's believe that this is an actual real place, right? Based on the other shit he's gotten in and out of, he's not fucking gonna die.
But regardless, even if he did die, I hate that choice. Well, and, like, I just choice. Can't I can't handle also, she would make that decision.
From what we have learned from Eccleston's run and Tennant's run and the beginning of Smith's run, the doctor wouldn't make that choice. Mm-hmm. The doctor would obviously and easily sacrifice himself in order to keep an entire universe of people alive.
He's done it many a time.
Yeah, he has way too much respect for the little people and humans and life and all the different forms that and it can
someone
take.
Someone who loved him would choose his wishes over her own. Yeah. But, of course, this version of River Song only was an archaeologist so she could find the doctor.
Which also enraging.
She's anyway. Not her own person. She has no actual agency who's made any decisions that didn't have to do with the doctor, apparently.
No. Yeah, this is going to be your ragiest podcast.
No, I love it.
I'm a little angry.
As soon as I, because I usually go through and I'll be like, oh, written by, and I saw Stephen Moffat. I was like, yes.
Yeah, and that's actually part of the reason why I picked this one. And I was like, are you ready for my no. River rage? And he's like, yes.
I forgot Moffat invented her. I just really like the, there's certain episodes every season that you just stick with. Yeah. Or stick with you, and these two mm-hmm. are the season four ones. Though all of Dr. Donna is perfect.
Now, you guys got a little ahead of yourselves with Amy stuff, and, yeah. which is fine. My next question is, Donna Noble, is she your favorite companion ever?
Oh my God, that is so such a torn. Hard question. Because my little heart, okay, so here's the deal. My heart will always, 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 always love Donna, right?
Always.
Mm-hmm. Always.
Always. Always. She's just amazing.
Because she's incredible. Yes. And,
well, she had the best character development arc, you know? Mm-hmm. She did some of the hardest things the doctor's ever done.
And
she
feel like did I actually
standing next to him.
I relate to Donna more than I have a lot of the other companions. Yeah. But Rose has a piece of my soul.
Forever.
And I don't, Rose. You know, forever. Like, I think it's just because I fell in love with Doctor Who, with Rose.
And I also think because we saw her with two iterations mm-hmm. of the Doctor, mm-hmm. and so that gives her a lot more of a handle on him mm-hmm. and helped, I think, with their developing relationship that she worked with both of them, so she understood him better than anyone.
Well, and both of us are pretty much suckers for a romantic
I mean,
subplot.
And they did that and so well
the
with
best
the best
tragic love story pretty much of all
it's
time.
Very true.
I was talking to John earlier about how I cannot watch the end of season two. Like,
well, I actually... It's
too hard.
That was the reason why I watched Doctor Who is because I remember you being utterly destroyed.
It was for like 3 days.
Yes, for like 3 days, she was absolutely mopey and destroyed. And I was like, what kind of TV show can do
it was
this?
Tough.
And
that
so
was
I literally, I watched it because you were so destroyed.
That was the end.
Which I think really says a lot about me.
Says a lot about you, buddy.
And wait, the things I like.
You can't get off the couch because of the depression from this television show? Give me the
must
name.
Watch it immediately.
So yeah. I'm actually, I fully agree with Jackie. I will always love Rose the most. She will always be my favorite companion because her wide-eyed excitement that she was just in it. And she's like, this is so exciting and I want to do everything. Can I touch this? Can I talk to that? Kind of stuff is how I feel I would go into it. Mm-hmm. And also the love story and everything. But fucking Donna Noble, man. It's like millimeters below Rhodes is Donna Noble.
Because she's so fantastic.
She's fantastic. And again, her character development was insane. And then to have it ripped away from us at the end.
Oh, I can't. Oh my God. It still rips me apart when I think about it. Like, I get teary.
It's another season ending. I can't watch that often.
Like, it's just the way that Doctor Who rips your heart out. Yeah.
And then, like,
it,
does like, a happy jig on it and goes, are you ready for the next season? You're like, yes. I guess.
I think she is my favorite companion.
Good.
I mean, I also like some of the classic.
Sure.
Classic Who's. But
yeah,
I think
we're not classically educated.
I know.
No, not at all.
I think she's my favorite mainly because it started out, there was no, this is not, will they, won't they?
Oh, yeah.
Was, it was just, yeah, we are friends palling around the universe.
And I like that she teased him, too, that they had such a good relationship where, yes, she, like, made fun of him.
Like, in this one, where the River's boy, going, pretty boy, yeah, see, and she says it, like, 9 times, and he goes, wait, I'm pretty boy? And John is like, yeah.
Well, she goes, eh.
she goes, yeah, that came out a bit fast. And, yeah, then he goes, pretty? And she's like, eh.
It's great.
I love that they're so cute, and I actually forever will remember at the end of the first episode, where we get her in this season with the little adipose babies.
Yes.
The at the very thing. End, she's got all her shit packed. Yes. And she's like ready to go.
Yes.
And he's like, I can't. Because he's emotionally just like damaged from, yes, everything that went down. Mm-hmm. He's like, I just can't do it. She's like, no, I'm going. She's like, he says, I just need, you know, a mate. And she goes, you want a what? Yes. Little string bean or whatever she calls, yeah, him. Like, and she gets hella mad at him. And I was like, that was so cute. Because he was saying, no, a friend. I don't
want
to bone you.
A mate, not two mate.
And then, like, even in Silence of the Library, when he, like, touches her to move her out she's of the like, way, what? She's like, hands.
Yes.
And that's one of the things I really love about Donna. And a lot of it comes from defensiveness and insecurities. But, yeah, I feel like this is where I identify with her, is if you fake it till you make it, head up, shoulders back, like, people won't know, and, yeah, that's how you get through life. And I feel like that's been Donna her entire life. She's got that horrible mom. No one takes her seriously.
Well,
she's
except
older.
Except Wolf.
Yeah.
Her grandpa.
I can't talk about Wolf. Yeah. I will start crying.
No, it's the worst. Yeah.
But that's why I love Donna, just because I feel like I see a lot of myself in her, and so that's why it's hard for me to choose, because she's so great.
Yeah, I loved the friendship aspect.
Yes. And it was nice just for me emotionally coming off of Rose being pissed about Martha to have another companion come in and straight up go, I am never, ever, ever going to love you like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I went, thank Christ, I need a break.
Which, and we'll jump ahead, and I'm pretty sure neither one of you have finished the current season.
Mm-mm. No.
Or maybe even started it.
I didn't start it, actually. I decided not to.
I didn't finish last season.
Okay,
because I'm so angry about
it. We won't get too far into it. I'm hoping, because in the Christmas episode, we get the last scenes basically like, this is a fresh start. We need to have fresh start, yeah, to second chances. So I hope we're going to get a more friendshipy thing going on.
I would be down for a male companion.
You know what?
Yeah.
Like, Taylor and cool. I talked about that in the last episode. We would be totally fine with that.
I would also like him to be super hot and take his shirt off periodically, because how much of Amy's legs did we have to stare at for 2.5 fucking seasons?
You're you know not what? Wrong.
Totally fine with it.
He
go
could be
for
eye
it.
Candy.
All of them have been pretty hot.
I could see, and
all
I
the companions.
And I can see that being also a comedic thing for Peter Capaldi.
Right. Yeah. Who has this like super hot 20 something like Abercrombie and Fitch model. He's like, God damn it.
Yes.
I would watch this shit out of that.
That would be
show.
Great. I would be totally fine with that.
I will tell you,
I just need Moffat to leave before I'm going to watch again.
I need
perfectly
a different
blind.
Showrunner.
That's fine. Yeah. I don't know. I feel strongly about it this season. Like, if anyone wants to go back and listen to the episodes, you can tell by the end of the season, we're just all done. We're just like...
Which I'm like really pissed about, because I liked Clara a lot when we first met her.
I loved her too.
He destroyed her,
yes.
Just like he did Amy
he
and
destroys
River.
All of them.
And then I love Peter Capaldi from the other stuff that he's been in, and I was ridiculously excited about him being the Doctor, because he's not young and hot, and he's grumpy and cranky, and he reminds me a little of Eccleston.
Mm-hmm.
And I was so stoked about it, but then he tried to make like the Clara Capaldi happen, and I was like,
well,
can't we just like for 1 second not have this bullshit?
Yeah, I would recommend, if you can tough it out, there's some episodes that are just...
Are they worth it?
Yeah, there's some really
good
episodes.
I want to, because I love Peter Capaldi.
I'll watch them with you if you want.
Yeah.
I
mean,
that.
if I had a list of things to watch, I guess I might go through that. I just can't see myself watching a whole season, honestly.
That's fair. I could give you...
I mean, I couldn't even...
There's no chance, though, is there, for Moffat being dumped for getting someone else?
No, I don't think so. He might need to
leave at some point.
Well, though. He just got knighted for it, so I feel like we're stuck with him for
he's
at least.
He's knighted? Oh,
yeah, he just got knighted because of Sherlock, which is also a piece of shit show.
Okay, well.
And this
let's keep it down over there. Please do not street fight me.
I do not like Sherlock either.
Okay. So, next question.
Back to Doctor Who.
Back to Doctor Who. Where do you rank, I guess it wouldn't be really Monster of the Week. Where would you rank this? Where would you rank them in terms of scariness?
Dude, right under the angels, who I find the absolute scariest.
That's the other thing about Moffat. He takes something very simple, like
and destroys
the dark.
Their life with them.
Yeah. And makes them terrifying.
Yes.
And he did such a good job, because when I'm watching this episode, you know, I watched it today, and I was sitting there going, God, this is scary.
I was actually like, I was kind of like, oh yeah, okay, that's terrifying, all right, like not too bad, but then they started like moving around in suits and like learning how to talk and shit, and I went, okay, now I'm out, this is too scary. Like, I can't handle it.
So right under the angels.
Yeah,
angels being the scariest of all Doctor Who villains.
Yeah
100%. Though okay. Absorbing Man's kind of also terrifying for me, to be like sucked away forever, and then like
from
you don't exist,
love
you're
and
just
monsters?
You're just a piece of something.
That episode was,
you know what, the more times I watch that episode, the better I like it, because when I first thought, I was like, what the fuck is this? I hate this. But every successive time, I've found things to like about it.
I think those are all my questions for now. I have a bunch of notes. I have a bunch of River Song notes, obviously, because
she's the best.
You know that they originally wanted Kate Winslet to play River Song?
No, I didn't know that.
Damn.
Yeah, and
I love Kate. I mean, I love
Alex Kingston.
Alex Kingston.
She's fantastic.
I mean, she's amazing, and I actually like that they picked Alex Kingston.
Well, she was on ER too, so I was like, I know her from ER.
Yeah, she fell in love with the glasses doctor, and they had a baby, and then he died.
Yeah, that was really sad too.
Some bullshit.
This episode, though, the Silence of the Library / Force of the Damned, destroyed me.
I
was crying.
I watched it at work like a fucking idiot.
I did
and
the
I'm
laugh
like,
cry.
I'm like tearing up at my desk, just going, I hope no one looks at me, because how do I explain this?
I'm literally silently sobbing while I'm watching it.
You know what? And the worst thing, like, I remember I have really positive, like, deep feelings for these two episodes. I remember loving them and thinking they were really, really good. And I forget that I love them because they're so heavy. Because there's this huge emotional return for like investing in this story.
Well, it starts at the very beginning when she even sees the doctor, and she literally goes to him and she's like, oh my God, do you not know me?
Oh God.
And that moment,
her face when she realizes,
like, how brokenhearted she was that he didn't know who she was was so powerful.
Well, and like, again, the laugh cry, like, Stephen Moffat has a really good take on, I can't believe, anyway, on the whole really tense moment.
Yeah.
Alleviated by humor, because when she's talking about, you know, we cross and he's never met me, and have you ever like seen a photo of someone you've known before they met you?
Yeah.
And Donna just goes, what are you talking about?
Yes.
Do you know him or not? And I was like, God damn it, because you're
and that's
there.
Why Donna's great.
Yeah.
Also,
yes, that's
also
why she's amazing.
Again, she takes no shit from someone. But anyway,
just like, stop talking in riddles, just
yeah,
tell
just
me
fucking tell
like
me.
I don't understand, I asked you a simple question.
But yeah, no, it's so fucking like Alex Kingston's performance in this just like ranges
amazing.
So well from
just
like
heartbreaking
cocky bullshitter to this moment where you can see her whole world is shattered.
Yeah, exactly.
And I fell for her so fast that, because, you know, she hits those emotional deep strides pretty quick with Donna, and already I'm like tearing up for her.
And it's also weird because we eventually get to the point where we find out that her meeting the doctor for the first time is basically her demise. Mm-hmm. And we're getting their timelines. Somebody did a nice graph of their timelines and how they intersect.
Mm-hmm.
And I almost think she realizes, since he hasn't met her, that that's the end for her.
Because like,
she's known him basically her entire life. her original.
Well, I think that's how like she put it together, and that's part of the look on her face when she realizes not only is it like love, heartbreak, but it's also oh fuck, well, I'm gonna die. And it's
like when she talks about like oh, the last time you saw me, you showed up in a new suit
and you handed me.
Yeah, and she's remembering that too. You know what I mean? Like,
and that's like as like a human person, that's got to be rough to go, well, today is the day I die, and I know because the man I love basically told me.
Yeah.
Also, I don't get a kiss because he has no idea who I am.
Nope.
Sucks.
There. So we still haven't got that scene where in any of Who where she's given the screwdriver. That never happens.
Hmm. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot that we were promised in their relationship that we did not get to see.
Yeah.
I mean, I would have loved to see that last day of theirs, to be perfectly honest, where they're so in love and they're hanging out. You never get those moments like, with them. So, unfortunately, by the time we get to 11, they have zero chemistry.
None. Well, and, I mean, 11, he doesn't have any chemistry with anyone.
No, he didn't. But
hey.
Look, I love him, but that man is not, not a sexual creature.
I don't hate him. It's just one of those things where it was like, I was disappointed by that love story because there's nothing there.
Well, and when he's 11 is when they get the most physical. Mm-hmm. And I'm just staring at the two of them going, how are you going to do this with that like wet noodle of a man? Like, what the shit?
I love Matt Smith.
I love him. He's a great doctor. I legitimately
might be more emotionally attached to Matt Smith than David Tennant.
Really? Wow.
And I don't know why.
No joke. I don't mean this. This is going to come out really mean, but that's weird.
No, that's fine.
That's just weird.
Find myself rewatching. Well, you know, it's been a while since I've rewatched Tenet. Mm-hmm. I'd be like, hey, have you seen Doctor Who? Yeah. So we, you know, rewatch it, whatever, blah, blah, blah. The more Matt Smith I watched, I just find myself like, I'm just very emotional about everything. Uh-huh. And I don't know why. Like,
interesting.
I don't know. I think it's almost because of that whole, he plays young very well, but he also seems super old.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know, guys.
Well, I mean, you find what you love in each of them, I think.
But I still love David Tennant. Let us not get it twisted.
Obviously. I was reminded watching Sansa the Library about why I love him. Because I have a thing for skinny, flaily idiots. Like, I love Chandler. I love this kid Styles on Teen Wolf. And I love David Tennant. And it's all the same pattern. Tall, lanky, does physical comedy really well. And just watching him react to stuff, like when other Dave got taken.
Not proper Dave.
Other Dave.
Which I don't know why that's so great.
We have to start using proper in our language.
Proper
we
Dave. Really do.
I just watched Snatch and he was like, not proper fucked, and I was like, we have to bring this in. But anyway, like, other Dave got taken and he's trying to talk to the Vasha Narada in that hallway, and he's trying to get him to like use words via Dave ghosting, which ghosting is a whole another terrifying
thing.
God,
that was horrifying.
Yes,
but then all of a sudden Dave starts talking and David Tennant, I watched this like 9 times at work, he goes, oh there it is, like, and his like reactions to stuff, and I it was nice remembering how much I loved him.
Yeah.
So angry.
It's bizarre for me because I don't know if it's because I haven't really rewatched much of Matt Smith, but I have like almost no emotional attachment to him.
That's
like
fine.
Almost none. And it's probably just because I haven't rewatched it.
I think I'm with you. My emotional attachment for him is low as well. It was high on the 11th Doctor because every instance of introduction have actually been awesome.
Yeah.
They're separate throughout. Pilots. Yeah, throughout. Every pilot for each Doctor has been great. But I got so angry about it and I stopped caring that I couldn't connect with this Doctor like I did the other two. And I haven't rewatched. And I think that's where the connection fails.
Yeah, agreed. But let's go back to ghosting.
Ghosting is the worst thing ever.
So I wanted, awful.
But I actually really loved, the pretty girl. I forget what her name was.
Oh,
it's something long. It's like Angelina or something.
Miss Angelista?
Angeline?
Miss Evangelista.
Evangelista.
I loved that whole, like, I mean, I cried, obviously. But, like, when she's like, oh, don't tell them
I'm stupid. Is the nice lady there?
I've never seen her in anything else. Apparently, she was in the second Thor.
Who was she in the movie?
I don't know. I didn't see it. She's also in Inception. She's been in a bunch of things.
What was she in? Oh, she's the pretty girl in the red dress.
Yes. She plays, like, Hopeless very well. Oh. Like, I'm... Yeah, I don't know if that makes sense. I mean,
that's the thing, is like, it was such a cool thing, you know what I mean? Because she's so aware that she's an idiot, right?
Yes.
I actually really enjoyed that. Me too. She's pretty, she's frustrated that she's an idiot, but she's aware that she's an idiot. Yes. Like, she wants to be helpful,
yeah,
but being so dumb, like, restricts her ability to be helpful. Yeah. And she's aware, and she's frustrated. I can hold
things.
Yeah, I love that, that level of self-awareness I find really attractive in people. And right. So, like, seeing her going, I know this is my fault, but I just want to be helpful anyway. And I was like, oh, honey.
The other thing that was weird about that was they... I can never remember. How do you say it? The Vashta?
Vashta Narada.
The Vashta Narada, they let her live for a very long time. Yeah. She's just walking down the hallway, walks into this room, looks around. And then we
know where that chair
gets into. Yeah. I was like, wow, they really took their time with her.
Evangelista, you guys were
right. And that, yeah, that scene was just like, is the nice woman there?
Oh, God.
It's just so sad.
Oh, but then her last words, the only laugh. I'm like, meh.
Yeah, that was
Ice cream.
But again, like, Stephen Moffat's great with that kind of stuff when he's doing one episode at a time. And that was a lot of Catherine Tate acting, too.
Oh, jeez.
And her ability with the character development, because if that had happened to Bride Donna would have been laughing at her with the crew members. You know, she wouldn't have felt sad and then tried to connect with the girl. She would have
This is a seasoned Donna.
Yeah.
She's seen a lot of things.
I remember when I saw the Bride one, I kind of straight up hated her. I really did. And so when they announced that it was going to be Donna as the companion, I went, God damn it, this is going to be terrible. Because I was just off Martha, who I hated. And so...
Well, that's a whole nother thing.
It's a whole nother thing.
Yeah, it's a whole nother discussion. I'm getting better at
Martha, but that's fine. And so when the first episode, beginning to end, she changes. And it's not a change where you're like, wow, they just rewrote her character. She actually talks about it. She goes, I went traveling, but... You just come home and I saw so much and I want to see more, but I don't know how to do it. And it's frustrating for me. And so that's why I love Donna and Catherine Tate acting too.
Yes.
Like, you can literally watch her become a better person.
I'm trying to think, because we were talking about River Song and then we kind of went off on a tangent.
Yeah, we did.
And you were talking about David Tennant and his expressions and stuff like that. When
he's so flaily, I love it.
When she whispers to him,
oh my God,
that whole scene was nothing is really said,
but you know, it's like, but you know, it's some changing.
Yes, just by the look on his face.
I love his expression in that moment. Mm-hmm. It really shows, because
it's like fear and curiosity and almost longing. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, he's terrified, he's insanely curious, and he almost kind of like really wants it to be true.
Yes. Can we talk about the dead face kiosk people?
No. Oh God.
No. And I actually really loved Donna's reaction to them. I know. And she was like, no, it's a face.
I also like the doctor when she first asked, he's like, please don't worry about it. Please don't ask me about that.
Because he just knows this is a thing that we should not talk about.
He's like, Donna's not going to like this. Don't tell her. Don't tell her.
He's like, it's like donating a park bed. She's like, nope. Uh-uh.
No, it is not. Face. Which is funny, because later she's sitting on a park bench in crazy internet world.
She's a fucking face. Like, if she knew. I like Donna how when Noble she finds
has
out.
Been saved.
She finds out from the black lady. She goes, if you tell me I'm one of those faces. And I was like, Donna, you are. Donna,
you're a face right now.
You're a face right now.
Okay, so, but her whole, like, love story.
Oh, my God.
Jeez.
Liam, like, I couldn't. It broke me.
Seriously, I cried.
Did we need that?
No, we didn't need that.
And then he phases away.
I'm so mad at him, though. He should have jumped the fuck off that teleporter.
Yeah, why didn't you get off? Why didn't
he run? You know your mouth doesn't work. Run!
I know.
Use your legs.
Can you imagine if, like, they took him with them and he was, like, part of the team?
Well, that would have been it. She would have bounced, taking him back to Earth.
I think so.
Maybe not even Earth, taking him back to his planet.
Yeah, go home with you. I think that's probably what would have happened.
No, you're right.
And would have saved all of us a lot of heartache. She
loved him. And I like that, too, that she had this fully developed relationship and she cared about him a lot. And, you know, I don't know. I love that. Yeah. It was nice. And it's so sad that I really thought we'd get him back. Like, he'd show up on Earth. No, she marries some other dude.
Yeah.
She does. It's unfortunate.
Which is almost fine, because she's not the Donna Liam Met. Yeah. So.
No, she's not, but still.
Oh, boy. That's real
Again,
sad.
This two-parter fucking, like, rip your heart out repeatedly. It, like, rips your heart out, trashes it, and then hands it back to you and goes, I'm done. Oh, wait, just kidding. And then
while
does it again.
While being really scary.
Yeah.
We haven't even talked about the little girl in the room with Dr. Moon, which I didn't even get till I looked at his name today.
Really? Oh my god, really?
I was like, oh yeah. Even though they said his name 400 times.
Oh wow.
This fucking
guy. I do remember though, the first time I saw this episode, how confusing I found the whole two things, right? Mm-hmm. The little girl and the Dr. Moon and really trying to put that together and mm-hmm. how it related to
Right.
And she's basically the whole first episode is two separate stories.
Yeah, she's watching them on the TV, but when she's in the library, she's a little like sphere thing. She's like one of those little things that the master has.
That the sphere thing, that's when it clicked for me that she was having some sort of like psychotic break, that she wasn't real, because the doctor has to be real. We know him.
Yes.
So for me, the second like she dropped is that, and he said, "Oh, she's a security camera." I went, "Oh shit, she must not be real."
Now, Taylor and I have talked about this at great length. I hate most child actors that are in Doctor Who.
They're either terrifying or terrible.
They're usually terrible. Oh. But this girl, Eve Newton, I think she might be the best child actor they've ever had on at least modern Who.
Sure.
If you can, I don't know. That was just a thought I had, because I was like, well, yeah, she's pretty good.
Well, that's just one
good.
Way to remind us that we're not classically trained in Who, so whatever.
I mean, I thought she did fine.
I wrote down, having not watched this in a long time, because right. I'm so mad at Moffat, I wrote down, ugh, kids, terrifying, because generally,
well, her kids children were like, what is that, mom? They were terrible.
They were terrible.
What is this, mommy?
Are we not real? Yeah.
No, you're not.
But like, as it went on, I remember, yeah, no, she's actually pretty good, and she sells being
insane,
confused, but also believing it, like, yes. She sells that part really well, and for like an actress of her age at that time, yeah.
Compared like, solid to work. I'm sure Donna's children were maybe like a year or two younger than her.
No, maybe you this think she's a little older? Like 10 or 11. Those and kids her were like kids five. Were like 3 or 4.
No, they were older than no. that.
5.
Yeah,
I mean, even then,
or yeah. maybe the other one was even 7.
I can't age children.
They were like tall. And
basically, they're babies, toddlers, preteens, no, I mean, teenagers. Like, I have no idea.
I'm talking like I have any idea. I normally actually refer to most children as it's. It's very embarrassing for most of my life.
Wow, buddy.
It's.
I can't seem to handle it.
So since we brought up Donna's quote-unquote children, how creepy is this alternate internet world? I was very disturbed.
You know what
by
I thought
it.
Was the most creepy part, though? Like, straight up, is at the very end, we got the 5 real people in there. We got River and her 4 companions.
Yes.
And then the last shot is River tucking Donna's children into bed.
And then another child.
There was three. Why would there be children?
It was the main girl, though. It was the main girl.
The main girl and the other two kids. Okay, fine. The main girl, I would have accepted, actually. River tucking in the main girl. I would take. Why do the other kids have to be there? If they're products of Donna's mind,
well,
why would
I,
they be there?
You know, I almost feel like they're product of the system.
Yeah.
Just needs to have kids around?
Maybe. I guess. Well,
having sex with that she would need babies?
I don't really think that's a thing in this internet world. Because, you know, there's a lot of...
I guess we can go into this, though, is my thinking, and this is very interesting because... I'm not particularly religious or anything like that, but I actually find the idea of my consciousness being trapped inside a computer world for eternity fucking creepy.
Yeah, that is very creepy.
And I actually find the change and the growth and the
And I find
new
it
stuff.
Really selfish to do that to someone.
Yes, I agree.
Looking
and
at it that way, and the fact that he did not get their consent, that you're right. He should not have done that. She probably would have preferred to die.
I mean, maybe she wouldn't have. I don't really know. But I just know that I'm not sure I'd want to live in eternity. I mean, I guess you get all the books or whatever.
Well, it almost seemed like you could live in any... I think...
Era.
What's
any
his name? Lux?
Yeah, he said she had access to all worlds ever written.
Yeah.
So she could go anywhere she wanted ever.
Yeah, but even then, all of it's fiction. It's not real.
True.
And I don't...
And for an eternity, you'd go through all of them a dozen and a half times.
And an eternity is a long time.
See, that's my problem, is I feel like it's just... Because there's no agency there. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't get to choose.
Yeah.
If you end it or whatever. Maybe you can end it. I guess I don't really know. I mean... But I have a... There's a part of me that's really creeped out by it.
You're not wrong. I haven't really thought about it that way.
I actually didn't. I was just like, they're all together.
Generally, like, you know, and for me, I was thinking, oh, this is so creepy.
Yeah.
Well, generally, I'm full on... I'm on the side of immortality. Like, generally, if I had a choice between death and immortality, I would definitely pick immortality. But I'm rethinking just for this, because... Immortality in a fictional world where you only have access to fictional things is not immortality.
Exactly.
It's a prison.
Like, I'm always pro-vampire, to be perfectly honest. Right. Like, if I could be a vampire, I would do that thing.
If you think living forever is going to get boring, you need to do more research. Exactly. You can learn literally everything ever.
But I think it's the lack of kind of... reality, or maybe it's
it takes away from the interest
or the whatever,
right? Because let's say you get to light warp speed. It's not real light warp speed. It's light warp speed as written by an author sometime.
And then it's almost like
and there's no real rules, right? So you don't actually have to. You don't have to learn. You don't have to adapt. You don't have to grow.
Right.
You don't have to.
Well, you literally don't. Grow because Charlotte's been in there forever. Yeah, she's just a kid forever.
That's the other thing. She's just trapped at the age of 12. Like, no, thank you.
Yeah, that's
well. And
weird.
She obviously hadn't grown intellectually either. Because she was
handling shit like a 12-year-old. Exactly. Yeah, so no, that's you're right. That's fucking terrifying.
Maybe if it was more of like you live an entire life and then you just kind of boom, and then you
restart
new life.
It or whatever. That would be actually really cool.
If you you were reborn and you got to do it differently, or at least pretend it was differently.
Yeah.
Also, I think it'd be more comfortable if they didn't know. Almost, you know, ignorance is bliss kind of a situation.
Exactly, but because you're so aware, I feel like you
How does that world stay stable if you know it's not real?
Well, and that's the thing, is it can't, right? Because Charlotte could choose. Remember when she turned off her dad?
Yeah.
Because he was, like, irritating her or whatever? Fuck. So you wouldn't ever have to deal with challenges or...
Because you could just go, I don't want this mountain to be here, blink, and
it's gone. And there's nothing that sounds more, like, boring and awful than not having to actually...
Try.
Yeah.
I know, right? Wow. Look at that.
Not real deep, guys.
Usually, Taylor goes, I didn't think about that. And now I'm saying, I didn't think about that.
Thank you, Jackie, for expanding our minds.
Jackie. That's
and
crazy.
Also, like, I always need better arguments for pro-immortality, so this helps me a lot.
Alternate universe. I have one note about alternate universe. When Donna gets married, the dress she's wearing, same dress from Runaway Bride.
I mean...
Is it?
Yes.
You have things that you love as a person down to your bones, and apparently wedding dresses
are that. I guess, you know, that does make sense.
So
it's also
using
connection.
Her unconscious to, like, make this stuff.
Her subconscious.
Subconscious, whatever. she's not, hopefully she's
if
not.
If she's unconscious, that's a whole other set of consent issues.
Well.
We should just go firebomb Stephen Moffat's house, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Do you want to do that later?
I mean,
like,
I do a little while later.
To London. I don't know where you live, Stephen Moffat.
I don't know either. Probably London, though.
Okay.
Yeah, but so going back to the end of the episode, I mean, I really love these set of episodes.
It's such a good two-parter, too, because it straight up ends on a really good cliffhanger where everyone's going to fucking die.
Well, hold on. I don't want to wrap it up.
Okay.
I wanted to say, so now we talk about how being stuck in that internet place forever is like a whole, you know, how do you live in that?
I feel like we need to stop calling it the internet place, because the internet changes and grows. This is like virtual reality.
Dr. Moon's reality.
I don't know what to call it. The hard drive.
There you go.
The hard drive, we've established that the people that are saved into it that are actually dead are there forever. Now, how does Donna recover? How would a person recover from...
Oh, I remember this. The Miss Evangelista explains... that her body is saved in some sort of, like, frozen state.
Yeah.
Somewhere, and it can just... Because it's in the teleporter.
Right.
Well, it's like... Because I think in the way that it works in Star Trek, anyway. Cookies, nerd. Anyway.
Okay, I don't think you can nerd yourself. I'm sure.
And the way it works in Star Trek is that nerd. It actually maps out your molecules and knows where everything goes, right? And so, in theory, that's what's happening here.
Yeah, I think I made that assumption, is that the transporters just have them.
Okay, but that's not what I'm talking about. How would one be in this world where you think you're living years,
right?
And then the doctor saves you.
Right.
How would you mentally... How would you
that's why I love that moment when she like talks to him and she's like, is all right code for I'm really not okay?
Yeah.
Because I'm all right too.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like, I loved that moment.
That was great.
This adds to her character development. Yes. She lived 7 years. She had a stable relationship where she cared about someone else and more than herself. She had babies, which is you care about other people more than yourself. She truly mourned their loss because her screams in that bedroom like broke me.
Yes.
And so I think that those 7 years that she straight up will remember forever makes her into the Dr. Donna that we love that season. It ages her, it matures her, and it shows her that there are other things that matter than office gossip and all the things that were terrible.
And what did her choice of man say about her?
I love that. That moment's like so harsh, but also very interesting.
Sorry.
She's like, what does that say about me?
Everything.
Really hot guy who never speaks and is devoted to me. What is that? Everything.
Everything. Sorry. Did I say everything?
I meant to say nothing.
I was aiming for nothing. Accidentally said everything.
Straight up, I think, no joke, this is going to sound awful, but that's almost, I don't know how to say this. That's like a feminist, like, desire for you to have this hot guy who super loves you and just never fucking opens his stupid mouth.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I say, like,
feminist. Not feminist, but, like, sometimes as a woman, you're like, oh, my God, that would be great.
Well, yeah. I think, I mean, yes. And I think the thing is when you're stuck in a virtual reality situation.
Hard drive.
Or you get to, like, design your life.
Right. And you make all the decisions.
Then maybe he's who you choose.
Yeah.
But then because he was real.
What's so weird because, like, I do have dreams where, like, I get married and, like, do things, you know, in my dream. But it's always this weird, like, faceless dude.
Yeah, because you don't.
He's not, like, technically faceless. Yeah. So I just never see his face.
Right.
You just can't remember it.
Yeah, or something.
You remember his existence and hands and, like,
chests, yeah, like, other things like that. But,
shoulders,
like,
but never the face.
The face is never there. And I feel like that's sort of kind of like that, where you kind of impose.
Except, again, he was a real person.
It turns out he was real, so that's weird.
I almost feel like that's Stephen Moffat just trying to, like, crush our hearts even more.
Yeah.
In that, like, she finally met someone who's actually perfect for her. And she would also be perfect for.
Yes.
And she never gets to have him. Because I feel like that's Donna's story, is she's this terrible person. She grows as a human and she becomes
really
better.
I really don't want to talk about the end of Donna. I can't.
And then all of it is ripped away from her and she's back to where she started, even though that's her last choice. Like, I straight up think Donna would choose death over being who she was before the doctor.
Well, the unfortunate thing is if she had chose death, I think the world would have exploded.
I know.
So
I'm just saying, like, it's just another string in Stephen Moffat's, like, theme for this series.
Oh, yeah.
And her as a character is that everything will be removed from her, including the perfect guy.
So I guess winding down, we get the whole last river doctor scene, which is horrifying.
Though, like, how wicked smart is her? Like, she knew. She just knocked his ass out.
Yeah, she punches him. And then I love that. Why are you carrying handcuffs? Spoilers. Oh, spoilers.
But I was still crying, of course.
That was my cry laugh.
She was just sitting there, you know, and she's like, you can't. When she was just talking about them and how she's like, don't you dare rewrite that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. No, and it then was, like, super rough.
There's also the, I forgot to mention when she's talking to Donna and she mentions about the whole army's turn and run away.
Yeah.
And we actually get that scene in the Pandorica opens when he's, that's,
and he swaggers off back to his
boss.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's a great scene too.
It is a great scene.
I love when he figures out that future him, who I assume would be Matt Smith.
Mm-hmm.
gave her the screwdriver with the save spot.
Yes.
And he runs.
That's fun because like they straight up ended the episode. They ended putting a thing on the and leaving.
I closed my notebook and went, "Oh crap, I forgot."
Yeah, and like they left, and so and that's a long moment. Like he's waiting for you to just shut down and miss it. I really like that too when he just comes flying back and he's like, "Wait."
Yeah.
And I love the special effects when he turns off like the little thing that brings them down and he's just kind of like flying down with the screwdriver and it's like, it just looks so cool.
Yeah.
And the other thing, I really liked how this episode was lit, especially the snapping of the fingers opening.
Yeah.
Yes. Looks so cool.
I like that too, just because I remember straight up like when this season aired, I was deep inside of Doctor Who.
Yeah.
I fell for Eccleston and Rose, and I made it through Martha, and I love Tennant and Donna. And that was such a big deal that he could open it like by snapping his fingers. And I remember being so excited to like find out with him how he figures out that kind of stuff and the future of this show. And I hate Stephen Moffat so much for taking that from
And me. We also, speaking of Eccleston, kind of get a reference to the Doctor Dances Where Everybody Lives.
Everybody Lives.
We did. Yeah, I liked that.
Do that voiceover with River at the end. That's also what shocked me.
Like, it was great, though.
Damn it.
I have one last question, because I believe the Doctor leaves River's diary or notebook or whatever you want to call it.
He leaves it in the library.
He leaves it in the library. Do you think that's ever going to come back?
It depends.
Do you think someone's going to get a hold of this and almost be evil with it?
I mean, I kind of feel like no.
No,
because the
it's been too
what
long.
Are they called again? Crasha, whatever.
Vasha Narada.
Vasha Narada.
Oh, that's right. They're chilling there.
They're chilling there, and yeah, I feel like they're scary enough in the universe.
Yeah,
that perhaps this like, is not no something cares go about. There.
Well, as scary as they are, my favorite part is when the Doctor says, and I have to find it. It's a great quote. Yeah, I believe it's you're in the biggest library. I'm the Doctor, and you're in the biggest library in the universe.
Look me up.
Look me up. And then there's a pause, and they say, you have one day or something like that. It's like, yes. Awesome.
Look me up.
It's like there's that same moment in the 11th Hour when he's on the rooftop.
Yes.
And he's straight up like, scan the fuck out of me and look at my history and then leave, please.
Yes, and they're like, yeah,
those
you're
moments
right.
in that show, like they get my heart beating.
They're the best. Goosebumps. They're the best.
They're the absolute best. Who doesn't love him being the Doctor?
Right? Ugh, swaggering around.
Because the beauty of the Doctor is he really doesn't feel like he's as powerful as he is until he has those moments.
Until he has those moments.
What I'm saying is, like, he seems like a kind of normal, smart guy who's like helping out or whatever, and then he has these moments where you're like, damn.
Yeah, like Eccleston was just like an old weirdo in a leather jacket, and Tennant is just this like screwball, flinchy idiot, and Matt Smith is somehow worse. But then there's these moments where they stand up straight, they put their shoulders back, and they're like, I will fuck you up.
Yeah.
But then we get in our next episode that we're all doing,
we're doing another one.
We get the horrible side of...
Dude, I can't even talk about that. I'm like...
Well, we're going to have to, but that will be in our next episode. So we all enjoyed this, obviously.
It's one of my favorite two-parters of this great two-parter.
Rewatch it if you haven't seen it in a while. Yeah.
It's worth it.
Absolutely fabulous.
It's fantastic.
It'll pull you in.
I mean, don't
do
it at work like Monica.
Let me tell you right now, don't fucking do it at work like Monica.
Be in a dark room. Have some tissues alone. Ready.
Yeah, by yourself.
Yeah.
Or maybe with everyone else not looking at you.
Yeah.
Or maybe look at me. Just cry together. You know, yeah, grow
I do
as
that.
A group.
I do that. Cry together.
No, I want you to not look at me.
No, I won't look at you, but we will all be
crying. In the same room.
Okay. Yeah.
Then
like
I'm
when
in.
We read Harry Potter.
Oh, my God.
Okay, we're wrapping it up. We're wrapping it up here. So you can like us on Facebook. Just look up The Podcastica. Look for some Gallifreying writing, not the little black and white lightning. That's somebody else, but we like them. You can follow us on Twitter at The Podcastica. You can follow me on Twitter at Sir Pingle. You can follow Jackie on Twitter.
Fox and Ms. Moxley.
You can follow Monica on Twitter.
Emmy Hildy, two M's.
Two M's. You can subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, and SoundCloud. Just search The Podcastica. Look for the Gallifreyan writing and the space stuff, and you'll be good to go. Shout out to the Y-Axes for doing our music. You can find them on Facebook, facebook.com/TheY-Axes. You can follow them on Twitter, twitter.com/TheY-Axes. And you can buy their music on Bandcamp. That's theyaxes.bandcamp.com. They're also on Spotify and iTunes. And head on over to notlg.com/store and buy a shirt, please.
Yeah.
They're really cool shirts.
Yeah, we got a bunch of shirts.
Comment. We want to hear what you think.
Yes. Yeah.
Also,
what do you
talk
think
to
about
us
as guest
people. Do you want to hear more?
I mean, if you want to hear more, just let more of us.
Well, you're going to have...
Well, there's one more episode.
There is one more episode.
For you to decide.
But that we are going to do. If you want even more than that.
I mean...
Vote yes.
So next time.
#MLD. #Hashtag Foxy Miss Moxie.
#Hashtag Girls Interrupting Takeover Podcast Again.
Yeah.
So next time we will be reviewing The Waters of Mars, written by the fantastic Russell T. Davies and Phil Ford.
I miss him.
It actually won like an Emmy.
Yeah.
Well, we'll get.
Oh my god.
So thank you all for listening, and we will talk to you guys next time.
Bye. I'm disappointed
someday,
in you
if
you don't.
I ever, you know, come across a vampire.
Look, I want in. I would even treat, I guess I'd be a vampire. I'd rather not be dead, but like, I want immortality.
I would rather not be dead, and the whole drinking blood thing sounds kind
super
of
weird.
Horrifying.
I don't
but,
really like the taste of blood. It's like metal.
No.
Yeah. I really don't
you know
either,
what? Maybe it would change when you become a vampire.
Maybe
it
would be attractive.
That it does.
Also, you have to figure out which rules of vampire. Like, do you die in the state that you're in, or do you die in like the best state you ever could have been because you have to be seductive to get blood? Like,
yes.
You have to figure out the rules of vampirism before you sign up for it.
Agreed.
Okay.
Because some of them are pretty.
If it's
like being human ones,
being human or even what's the girl
well,
who does
little
the,
kids who
the
were vampires.
Fucking vampire books is
Laurel
like Christian.
King Hamilton.
No, the other one, the one that's terrible that wrote that 800 thing where the villains won.
Oh my god, Anne Rice.
And if it's Anne Rice vampires, I'm out. I'd rather die. But if it's Laurel K. Hamilton vampires,
no.
Well, even then, because you die as you or you live as a vampire. As
no,
you
but
were
at least they like
died.
Sex.
That's true.
The
yeah,
Anne Rice ones
true.
Don't like sex.
I read like right. one or two Laurel K. Hamilton.
They were real good.
I read Obsidian Butterfly.
Oh, that's my favorite.
Yeah, you gotta good. Start at the beginning.
I know.
What the shit?
I know.
What are you doing?
Some kid did a book report on it in high school. Very weird.
No joke.
I love that
best
so
high school
much.
Ever.
And I. They sold it really well, and I was like, yeah.
Yo, I'm going to bring you the first one. I have it.
Okay.
I mean, it's up to you. You can you have choice in this.
You're only allowed to read through book 10, though.
That's what I've heard.
I
have heard that.
Obsidian Butterfly is like book 8. Narcissus and Chains, which is my favorite, is book 10.
Obsidian Butterfly is actually pretty one book off.
Yeah, you don't even need the rest of it because she goes off to like Arizona to fuck around with her.
I think I did go back and start reading the first couple, but I...
Yeah, it's hard.
I can't
there's
remember.
A lot of books.
Anyway,
but
giant
like even
tangent.
The vampires sorry, of Venice in Doctor Who world. I don't remember.
Well, they
weren't
technically
vampires. They were
vampires.
Fish. Oh, that's right.
They were fish. Lame.
They were fish people.
Oh, and it was like a fish mom who just wanted her fish babies to like live.
Yeah, forever. And then there was like the people in the lake that would like.
Weird. Yeah,
that one was weird.
You know what? Someone should write
still good
an
episode,
episode
like
of
Doctor
real
Who
vampires.
With real vampires.
You're not wrong.
Well, I think they're trying to... No, because werewolves exist in this place.
Yeah, werewolves exist on fucking Earth in this place. So we can goddamn
that's
have
how we
vampires.
Get Torchwood, people.
What?